Blog Talk Radio.
Supporters should not be very happy today, myself included. I'm going to break down the election for you. Much to your dismay, we're kicking it off with the Republican side. I'll tell you what's going on there. Then we'll get to the Democratic side. Then after that, Hillary Clinton has some support from a new establishment person that everybody in the media will pat her on the back for, whereas you should be fucking petrified that this is somebody who supports her. We also have stunning new benchmark reached by Donald Trump. You don't want to miss that. And a fascinating poll of millennials that shows, dude, they're so done with this system, it's ridiculous. I mean, wait until I give you the number, the percentage of millennials that are like, capitalism, fuck that. And then later on in the show, I got a whole bunch of silly stuff, including Fox News has an intellectual discussion about the election and see if you can count the number of times they bring up God. And the Alabama preacher who I've been trying to get to for 2 or 3 days now, we finally are going to get to him today. So even if I have to skip ahead at the end of the show, God damn it, I'm going to do it. All right, so let's get started here. A lot to talk about, and we're gonna do the Republican side first. So we had some elections last night, and they were decisive. On the Republican side, Donald Trump took a sledgehammer and swung it at Ted Cruz and John Kasich's face. He won Connecticut with 58% of the vote, an absolutely crushing victory. He won Delaware with 61% of the vote. He won Maryland with 55% of the vote. He won Pennsylvania with 55% of the vote, and he won Rhode Island with 64% of the vote. So he picked up about 100 delegates to Kasich's 5 delegates and Cruz's 1 delegate. And isn't this an interesting fact here? John Kasich still has fewer delegates than Marco Rubio. Oh, that is so pathetic. Now, not only is this race over, but now Trump has made it so that he's back on track and the projections show that he may indeed hit the magic delegate number and avoid completely a contested convention. That would be gigantic. That would be gigantic. So Nate Silver of 538 was talking about this yesterday on his live blog during the election coverage, how he made up all the ground that he lost in some of the other states where he didn't hit his projections. Now, he's made up that ground, so he doesn't give specific numbers as to what the likelihood is moving forward that Trump will avoid a contested convention, but he certainly gave the implication that now the more likely scenario is that he avoids a contested convention. Some states are coming up that do not favor Trump, like, for example, Indiana. Indiana, because of the demographic makeup and the religiosity, much more favors somebody like Cruz, but when you look at everything in totality moving forward, it does appear like it's more likely now that he will hit the delegate number and will avoid a contested convention. This is unbelievable stuff. So now it's time to have the conversation yet again. Why is it that he won so overwhelmingly? Now, we discussed this once before, but I want to come back and touch on some of the same themes here because virtually every single pundit on TV got this thing dead wrong. I have to admit that at the very beginning, I got it wrong. I was with everybody else. There wasn't a single person in the country that didn't dismiss Donald Trump at the very beginning. I was among the people that said, yeah, oh please, you're done. But I changed my mind and I started saying it's real very soon thereafter because I'm not dense. So I looked at the evidence, I looked at what was going on, and I went, oh, I was originally wrong. This thing is real, and this thing is going to go on for a while. So one of the main things as to why he did well, this is the elephant in the room, and it is a big plus, especially in our current society, is his celebrity status. And in many ways, this is the same thing that helped Hillary Clinton, too, that she was running against, an old senator from Vermont who very few people knew named Bernie Sanders. But Hillary Clinton already had that name recognition, already had that celebrity status. Same thing with Donald Trump. And that's, again, a big plus in our society, more so than I think anybody gave it credit for. And then also there's just the strongman personality. When you talk about Donald Trump, you immediately picture this overconfident, arrogant, cocky guy. And there's nothing that the far right likes more than an authoritarian personality. Because it makes them, in all seriousness, it makes them feel like emotional little kids and daddy's coming along and saying everything's going to be okay. That's a harsh way to put it and a harsh way to talk about that group of people in the country, but I think it's true. I think that they're waiting for a leader so they can shut off their minds, not that they use them well when they're actually using them, but they want to shut off their minds and say, okay, now we go into defense mode and we protect our leader at all costs. That's exactly what happened during the Bush years too. How they would defend him when it was utterly apparent to everybody else that, hey, this guy sucks and he's really doing some shitty things for the country. So his strongman personality helped him. Then also, guys, you have to give him credit for one thing. He's a fucking brilliant marketer and self-promoter. And tied into that, he also does this thing where he repeats himself over and over and over. And we may look at that, rational people may look at that and go, that looks stupid, like why do you keep saying the same thing? But the reality is, that just hammers home your message. And that's something that actually goes over well with the general public. You keep making the same point over and over and over, and then they get it, and then the things that you're talking about, whether they're true or not, in the minds of the people, it just becomes duh. It's like, oh, Lion Ted, duh, he's a liar, what do you mean? That's Ted Cruz, Lion Ted, he's a liar. Crooked Hillary that he's now saying. People are going to start saying, duh, yeah, of course, Crooked Hillary. What do you mean? She takes all this money from Wall Street, does their bidding, Crooked Hillary, yeah. So people might scoff at that and look down upon that, but it's actually a very, good strategy in terms of changing minds and getting people on your side. And then also, and you can go back and look at the video, I said this at the time, when that analysis came out that showed that Donald Trump speaks at like a third grade level, I think it was, everybody's, that's so stupid, look, he's speaking at a third grade level. And I said, no, that's a positive for him. Why? There are a lot of people that just aren't that bright in the country. So when they hear him talk, they think straight shooter, keeping it real, and, oh, I understand him and I get him. He's leveling with me. He's not trying to use these flowery nonsense, rhetorically nice sentences that don't mean anything. He's telling it like it is what he's doing, and I get him. He's talking to me like he's in my living room. So those simple sentences, again, it fucking helps him. And then another huge part of his success, I think, you won't hear anybody, any of the mainstream pundits say this, but I think the contradictions that he did on a regular basis actually help his campaign. Because it's not like the Republican base, the people who are going to vote in a Republican primary, it's not like they give a shit about logic, it's not like they give a shit about reason and rationality. Again, it's more emotional for them. So when you come out one day and say, for example, I want nothing to do in Syria, I want to get out of there, let Vladimir Putin fight ISIS, all the people in the Republican Party who really are more isolationist, and there is a wing of the Republican Party that's like that, the old paleoconservatives, they hear that and they go, awesome, that's my guy. But then the next day when he comes out and he says, oh, we should be more involved, and we should not only kill ISIS, we should go after the families of ISIS and commit war crimes, then you get the hawks that go, oh, awesome, I fucking love this guy. When he talks about the economy on taxes, he's like, well, I want low taxes. So again, you have the fiscal conservatives who are like, great, I love this guy. But then in the next breath, he'll say, oh, and also I'm done with these stupid outsourcing deals, these stupid free trade deals that ship all the jobs overseas. We're going to force them to stay here. Well, that's a genuinely liberal position. And so other people in the Republican base, the old school like union workers, who, have voted Democratic for a long time. Now they see a guy like Trump, an old white guy like they are, and he's saying things that are genuinely liberal sometimes on trade issues, and they go, oh, fuck yeah, that's my guy. So the contradictions help him, and he has a crossover appeal that people on the left are not giving him credit for. And I think that's a scary thing to witness, because what more would a guy have to do to prove to you that he's a fucking threat, man? I mean, everybody at the beginning, after Iowa, he's done. After New Hampshire, he's done. After the second debate, after the third debate, after the fourth debate, he's done. They just kept moving the fucking goalposts, and now he's got the nomination locked up, and they say, but in the general, oh, he's got no shot, he's going to be done. Based on what? High unfavorables. Hillary has high unfavorables too, dipshit. So what are you talking about? He's exceeded expectations every step of the way, and then people still smugly say, like, oh, yeah, but eventually. It's become comical at this point. So his contradictions help him, and when he throws out every once in a while some genuinely liberal positions, it helps him. When he says, I'm never going to cut Social Security, and all the other idiots on the Republican debate stage say, I'm going to cut it, yeah, Republican-based voters agree with Trump. Look at the polls. The overwhelming majority of Americans go, yeah, I'd never want to cut that. I like that. So, again, it was so easy for him. A mediocre con man had such an easy time winning the Republican primary because all the other candidates also suck balls. They're just terrible. Fucking Ted Cruz, that guy, that's the guy going to run against him. You know, Rick Santorum 2.0, who only speaks to people who believe in Christian Sharia. That jackass who also looks like a smarmy politician and has a face that everybody wants to punch. That's the guy that's going to be, you know, in the end here against Trump. Don't be ridiculous. And then finally, the last thing that I think led to dominance is xenophobia. You know, people don't like to talk about it, or they don't talk about it often enough, but yeah, the fucking Republican base is massively xenophobic. That's not just me talking, that's the polling data talking. So in some of the exit polls yesterday, I forget which state it was in, I think it was Pennsylvania, they asked, hey, do you agree with Trump's ban on Muslims? 70% of Republican primary voters said yes. So, you know, they see ISIS on TV and they're like, oh, that's all Muslims, can't have no damn Muslims here. They're not going to listen to reason. If you come in there and you say, well, hey, wait a second. Now, the people who are fleeing them, many of them are also Muslim. I don't care. I'm Muslim enough. Muslim's bad. Okay, but then wait a second. What about Sufi Muslims? What about Ahmadi Muslims? What about Shia Muslims who are not engaged in jihad at the moment? These are people who were trying to escape. I don't care. They all the same to me. 70%. Want to do a ban on Muslims entering America. So that xenophobia where he let it hang out, man, where he said, yeah, these immigration is the problem. These Mexicans that are coming in here, they're rapists, they're criminals. I assume some are good people. I like how he flipped it. Not, hey, some commit crimes like any other group. No, I assume some are good people, implying that, like, the majority are rapists and criminals. But people hear that in the Republican base. They're like, yes, yes, because they scapegoat. That's what they do. They wanna blame other people who are worse off than them for the problems in the country. Guys, it's not like there isn't enough blame to go around for the state of the country. More importantly, you should blame the donor class. You should blame the wealthy and the corporations. But they don't. They fall for the oldest trick in the book. Get people who are middle class and poor to hate other middle class and poor people. You know, it's a classic theory that's just held true throughout history, and here we have Donald Trump taking advantage of that, and it fucking worked like a charm. So when he comes out there and he lets it all hang out, and he's like, yeah, this is xenophobia. People in the Republican base go, oh, this is what I've been thinking forever. Now he's just saying it. Whereas some of the other Republican candidates, they'll dance around it, you know, and they'll drop hints every now and then, like, I'm kind of with the xenophobic people and the bigoted people. But Trump's just like, no, fuck the fucking coded language. I'm just going to say it. And people go, yes, you mix that in with some genuinely liberal positions, you mix it in with the contradictions, you mix it in with the celebrity status and the strongman personality. Easy peasy for Trump. So he's almost certainly going to be the general election candidate, unless there's a contested convention and they try some historic sleazy nonsense. And brace yourselves, because it's certainly a possibility that we have a President Donald Trump. Okay. All right, next. Get to the Democrats. Last night on the Democratic side, we had a showstopper election, almost quite literally. Hillary Clinton took Connecticut with 51% of the vote. She took Delaware with 60% of the vote, Maryland with 63% of the vote, and Pennsylvania with 56% of the vote. Bernie took Rhode Island with 55% of the vote, but that's not enough. So based on the polling data moving forward and what Bernie would need to win, which is 64% of the pledged delegates moving forward, it's safe to say it's not going to happen. Now, he's going to stay in the race because, as we discussed recently, Hillary might get indicted. And if so, then there's a real argument for Bernie to flip superdelegates and to actually get the nomination. But like I said, not good for Bernie. It appears like it's over in terms of him actually being able to win this thing outright without a contested convention and flipping superdelegates. But he should stay in the race for that reason because, again, she's under investigation by the FBI. There's been some whispers in the past few days that something's going to go down. Either there's going to be some sort of an indictment, or if there's not an indictment, you're going to have the FBI leak the investigation to the media and show exactly what Hillary did. And that may bring up some big questions and really, really tank her general election chances. So it does make sense for him to stay in the race, but just know that in terms of him overtaking her, that's not going to happen. And everybody in the upcoming primaries should still 100% go out and cast a vote for him anyway, but we just need to be realistic here about what the chances are. Now, it's time to have the conversation, too, about how Bernie Sanders almost did Mission Impossible. I mean, he stood up there and he took on the biggest name in Democratic politics in modern American history. He took on the entire Democratic establishment and the financial establishment, and he took on the entire mainstream media, and he nearly won. He wasn't known by virtually anybody a year and a half ago. He's a random senator from Vermont. And he got to the point of being tied and leading in some national polls with Hillary Clinton. And you need to understand that regardless of how this portion of the movement ends, the movement must continue and it has to go on. And it has to go on because it was supposed to go on no matter what. And Bernie himself will tell you, hey, if it doesn't happen for this campaign, if it doesn't happen me becoming president, you still need to go on and you still need to fight. Because no change ever just came from the top down. Okay, there's always, always, always different factors at play. And one of the most important ones is a true grassroots movement that applies pressure to those in power, that lets them know, hey, you don't have a fucking choice. You're going to do these things that we're calling for, and that's the end of the conversation. And, you know, throughout time with the civil rights movement, we've seen that. With other movements, we've seen that. And understand that people always think that taking that next big step is impossible until it fucking happens. You know, if you talk to women 2 years before they got the right to vote, hey, are you going to get the right to vote? They would have said, fuck no. If you talk to people when alcohol was illegal in the United States and you said, hey, in 2 years they're going to get rid of this prohibition nonsense, would they have believed you? No. If you told a black person living in segregated Mississippi or Alabama, 2 years before we got the passage of the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, and we ended segregation, hey, you know that this thing's going to be over soon, right? They would have said, pie in the sky nonsense. People say today, hey, stand strong. Don't worry. At some point, we're going to get money out of politics. We're going to end the legalized bribery and the corruption in our system, and we're going to pass have clean elections in America and get a constitutional amendment. when people say that, right now you can respond with total and utter cynicism. Yeah, don't be stupid. Okay, keep saying that. Eventually it's going to happen. What do you think? We're going to be stagnant and it's going to be like this throughout history? That's not the way history works. I mean, we're talking about something here that is constantly developing and evolving. And again, you might say today, the idea of a living wage, that is never going to fucking happen. Okay, well, let's see. Let's watch how many people start to join in the fight for 15, for example, among other movements, and then put pressure on the government, and then find a way to get a living wage law and chain it to inflation, and then we've won on that one forever because you chained it to inflation. So these things are possible, man. That's why the campaign Hillary has run, I mean, it's the worst imaginable campaign for any Democratic candidate. I mean, her supporters and her surrogates have been out there saying that Bernie Sanders calling for single-payer health care, for example, and universal college, that's rainbows and unicorns. For fuck's sake, man, every other modern nation has universal health care, and many of them have universal college. What do you mean it's fine, this guy? Oh, it's too expensive. Your fucking candidate voted for the Iraq War, which by 2053 will have cost $7 trillion. And now you're going to turn around and lecture people who pay their fucking taxes that, hey, we're not going to give you education and we're not going to give you health care? How fucking dare you? How dare you? So we may not have won in this particular way, but the fight goes on, and there are a million and one ways in which we will win. And people in the Bernie coalition have to stick together, have to keep fighting, and eventually will win. There's one major fact which people don't pay attention to nearly enough, which is that the political system is nothing but window dressing. You know, people will say, oh, well, Hillary got the most votes, so obviously that's what people want, is what she's pushing for. No, no, no. Let's get more specific here. Look at the actual individual policy positions and see what the American people are in favor of. You name the issue, and the American people are just liberal. Not center-left, not centrist, not center-right, like many in the mainstream media believe. No, no, they're just liberal. They want to raise the minimum wage, 80%. They want universal background checks for gun purchases, 90%. 60% say raise taxes on the rich. 60% say under no circumstances cut Medicaid and Medicare and Social Security. Only 17% still want to be in Afghanistan. I'm not kidding. You name the fucking issue. And it's a majority of the American people who say, yeah, I'm just liberal. So the actual system is built to water down what we want because they take donor money. The politicians take donor money from corporations and wealthy people, and then they do their bidding. You can only keep that up for so long before the people say, no, there's going to be some changes here. It's that Princeton study, which is so important, which proves political science research that corporations and wealthy donors get what they want all the time. There's no correlation whatsoever between what the American people want, what poor and middle-class people want, and the legislation we end up getting. Okay, this is why Congress, there was a recent report out that said Congress has a 4% approval rating. What the fuck? I've said this before, but guys, you can elect Congress one day, a month later, or 3 weeks later, whatever, 2 weeks later, you do a survey and you say, hey, what's the approval rating? What's the favorability rating of Congress? And the same people who just elected these people will say it's like a, you know, 16%, 18% approval rating. How can that possibly fucking be? It can be because we all know the system's broken. We all know we're voting for the lesser of two evils. So we have power in numbers. And the media and the establishment might do everything they can to try to distract you from that reality. But it's true. It's the reality. So if all of us who believe these things come together and march on Washington and fight in a plethora of ways, call your congresspeople, get involved, join various groups, if we all get together and fight, they literally can't win. So, okay, they have the money. Okay, they have the system currently bought. But we have 80%, 90% of the American people agreeing on some issues, including getting money out of the system, where we can make allegiances and alliances with people in the center and actually even on the right. So if we all band together and stick together, what, we can't get it done? For fuck's sake, again, to bring up the civil rights movement, they were able to get it done with fewer people. course we can get it done. We just have to fight for it, and we have to understand that the end goal was never just to get one candidate. I mean, don't get me wrong. It would have been fantastic to have somebody who's a total and utter ally of the movement in the White House, no question about it. But if we can't manifest that into reality, well, then that just means we have to fight even harder when it comes to the grassroots. And you know who would say fuck you out of that more than anybody else? Bernie Sanders. So you continue to fight for that philosophy and that message. And sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But always remember that change never solely comes from the top down. Sometimes it comes from the top down, but it's always a more nuanced picture than that. It's always a more mixed picture than that. There's always heroes behind the scenes fighting for these things and applying the pressure to make it so that from the top down, we actually get those laws implemented. So we keep fighting, we move along here, and we live to fight another day. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, we have a new right-wing supporter for Hillary Clinton, and it's really sad. And then also we'll get to the new benchmark reached by Donald Trump. You don't want to miss any of this. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
All right, bitches, we're back.
All right, let's move on to a new supporter here for Hillary Clinton. So we have a new right-wing supporter for Hillary Clinton here.
Yay.
General David Petraeus. Now, I want to give you some of what he said here. He said, "She'd make a tremendous president." This is according to a book review in the Wall Street Journal. He also said that she was extraordinarily resolute, determined, and controlled. So this marks, what, the 312th right-winger who has now come out and supported Hillary Clinton. Remember that she has a war criminal buddy, Henry Kissinger. And there was an article, what was it, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago that we covered, where prominent neoconservatives have said, "Oh, if it's Hillary versus Trump, I'll vote for Hillary Clinton." Neoconservatives. Now, why? How could that possibly be? I mean, we're talking about a Democratic president here. Well, just look at what she says. At one point in the campaign, she had her foreign policy advisors write a letter warning against voting for Bernie Sanders. And in the letter, they bragged that Hillary Clinton views the world as a, quote, chessboard. Wait, why would that be something to brag about? So they flat out admitted, like, yeah, well, the way we look at foreign policy is our soldiers are pawns in a game. And it's us versus Russia. So we view everything in that through that prism. So, for example, when you look at Syria that way, well, then you may have to align yourself with some unsavory rebels who are jihadists and Islamists because, hey, they're fighting Assad. And Assad is aligned with the Shia government of Iran, who, of course, we're against because they're against Israel. And he's also aligned with Russia. So when you view the world as a chessboard, these are the decisions you make. So, in other words, you do not view the world as, okay, who's actually the biggest threat, and is there a direct threat of violence against the United States right now? You know, if you view the world through that spectrum and that prism, you'd go, oh, well, obviously we should all be united against the worst problem, ISIS. But no, Hillary Clinton, oh, she's so sophisticated and high-minded that she's above that, bro. So she views the world as a chessboard. And also, as she said before, hey, I want to have a more muscular foreign policy. So you're bragging about being more interventionist. And then she's given speeches about Syria where she said, I need to set up a no-fly zone. We're going to set up a no-fly zone so that Russia can't be involved there. Okay, but wait, if you actually set up a no-fly zone, if you read into what that entails, that means massive numbers of ground troops. So you're saying you want to ground invade Syria now? Well, that's fucking crazy. And furthermore, what if they violate this no-fly zone that you set up? Are you prepared to shoot down a Russian plane? And then are you prepared to have World War fucking 3 because you just escalated over Raqqa in Syria? No, this is so stupid, I can't even put it into words. How much more evidence do you need that intervention was a stupid idea? There's more fucking jihadists today than there were before we started doing all these interventions. It hasn't worked. And you want to escalate and you want to make it worse and you want to get our own soldiers more involved and you want to waste more money as you smugly lecture Bernie supporters about how it's unicorns and rainbows to try to get single-payer health care in America. Come on, I'm not going to make promises I can't keep. God, and this is the person who has the overwhelming lead in the Democratic primary. What a joke this is. Now, the most important point about David Petraeus. So I need you to understand, this is a guy who said, hey, Hillary make a tremendous president. In his judgment, he says, hey, this would be great, a Hillary Clinton presidency. You know what else he liked? You know what else he supported and pushed for? You know what else was in his judgment? But David Petraeus argued to the Obama administration that we should literally, in Syria, arm Al-Qaeda. Congratulations, Hillary. You got the endorsement of a psychopath. Why the fuck would he argue that? Why would he argue that? Well, again, your measly, stupid little mind that actually just gives a shit about direct threats against the United States, you can't understand this sophisticated, high-minded foreign policy that views the world as a chessboard and is in a standoff with Russia and Iran, and you don't understand that Assad is the bigger evil against the United States. I don't know. It makes absolutely no sense. And, oh, we need to arm Al-Qaeda because maybe Al-Qaeda will not only topple Assad, which is a good thing, but also Al-Qaeda will fight ISIS. Nailed it. So arm one group of jihadists to fight another group of jihadists, and they definitely will in no circumstances turn those weapons on us. Wait, they already did a million times? What? You want to arm the people that attacked us on 9/11? Really? That's what you want to do? You think that's a smart idea? Wow. Well, you're really stupid, aren't you? Guy who argued for arming Al-Qaeda endorsed Hillary Clinton. I mean, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of this term, and I think it's overused, but you want to talk about regressive. Do you agree with the person who says arm Al-Qaeda? That's pretty fucking regressive. That, in that person's judgment, Hillary Clinton nails it on foreign policy. That's pretty fucking regressive if you support her. So here you have General Petraeus and what his views are on the topic. And furthermore, let's not forget, General Petraeus is also known for facilitating torture all throughout the Middle East. He really believes in liberal values and human rights and altruism. That's why he does what he does, and that's why he, you know, fought for his country. This guy's a cretin, okay? He's a bad person. He should be in fucking jail. And if he thinks he's brilliant by suggesting arming Al-Qaeda, perhaps he should be in a straitjacket too. But now you know who his choice for president is. Yippee-skippy! Okay. Now let's go to more on Donald Trump here. Because he did it again. So Donald Trump did a clean sweep yesterday. He won every single state that had a primary, and he won by gigantic margins. So it's over, you know. The only question now is whether or not he'll hit the magic delegate number. And if the projections hold true from here on out, he'll be the nominee and there won't even be the possibility of a contested convention. That's the more likely scenario today. So the Trump steamroller rolls on here, and man, is it something to behold. Well, Talking Points Memo has a new benchmark that he reached. They're reporting on that. It's a survey here. They say, according to a new NBC News SurveyMonkey poll out Tuesday, Trump now has 50% support among registered Republicans. Now, why is this such big news? Well, it's big news because people have said that it was impossible for him to get that kind of support. Now he has that support. So first the argument was, well, come on, he'll never get 20% support in the Republican Party. That's crazy. Then he got that. Then it was, well, I mean, okay, he might be winning with a plurality, but he'll never get above 30% support. Then he got that. Okay. He might have over 30% support, but again, he's just winning by plurality, not a majority. He'll never get to 40% support. He got to 40% support. Okay. Maybe he got to 40% and he still has a plurality, but he will never, ever, 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 ever get over 50% support in the Republican primary, meaning more than half of the Republican Party agrees with him and would want him to be their candidate. And then, whoops, he has, according to this Talking Points memo poll, 50% support nationally. And if you take the examples of yesterday, more than 50% support he has. I mean, he won some of those elections with 61%, 64%. So there's a lesson to be learned here, and it's a lesson that unfailingly people will never learn because they've proven that they're fundamentally incapable of learning this lesson because they're dense. The lesson is stop fucking underestimating Trump. Every single smug prick who's out there now saying he's got no shot in the presidency. Liberals should rejoice because obviously anybody we run would be Donald Trump. You sure you want to make that prediction? Because remember, they said, well, come on. After the first debate, he's going to be exposed and it's over. He won that debate in a landslide. Then he said, well, I mean, come on. After the second debate, that's really it. Bill Kristol, jackass Bill Kristol's out there tweeting peak Trump every other day. He crushed in those two. Then they said, oh, Iowa. See, he was up in the polls in Iowa, but he lost. Therefore, he's done. His campaign's over. What happened? Then he went on to win New Hampshire by gargantuan margins. They said, well, okay, but after Nevada, then it's over. No, it wasn't over. They kept moving the fucking goalposts every single time, and now he crushed everybody's expectations, and people are still saying, yeah, he's not going to win the general, because he's not, you know, sly enough, and he's not, he doesn't know how to run a traditional campaign. He's not a politician. Except, what's your analysis missing? People are sick of politicians, and he's running against the quintessential politician. He's running against the establishment in Hillary Clinton. Everybody's like, well, look at the polls right now. You know, he's crushing her, so yeah, it's going to hold like that. He hasn't even begun to start making the arguments that actually are going to resonate against Hillary. Like, his nickname for her, I think, actually makes sense, Crooked Hillary. Now, people say, well, that's not witty enough. Fucking wit sometimes goes right over people's head, especially the morons who would want to vote for Trump. So then it doesn't need to be witty. She's crooked. There, I said it. I'm going to keep saying it. Crooked, crooked, crooked. To the point where people go, duh, she's crooked. That's who she is. What do you mean? Like, obviously, she's crooked. That's obvious. So once you get that into people's heads, well, then you have a chance of winning. Once you say, hey, I bought her. When I was a business person, I gave her money, and she did what I wanted. You want that to happen now? You want people to keep giving her money? Why is Goldman Sachs giving you all this money? They're giving you this money because you're going to do their bidding. You don't care about the American people. I care about the American people. Nobody bought me. Nobody bought me. So I'm going to represent the people. These are the arguments he's going to make. The idea that he has no chance is just as stupid as the idea, the first idea that he had no chance. Ah, first debate, it'll be over. He'll get exposed. Oops, he won in a landslide. That certainly can happen in a general. Now, don't get me wrong, there's a chance that doesn't happen, okay? But all I'm saying is don't be so smug and ridiculous that you don't realize that this is a fluid situation, and oftentimes he can make arguments that are honestly much better than the arguments made by other idiots like Ted Cruz. You know, Ted Cruz used in the primary this argument over and over. Donald Trump used to support liberals, me, as if that's like, ooh. When Trump would always respond with, I was a businessman. I was friends with everybody. I'm trying to do the best for my business. And the next debate, Cruz would be like, yeah, but he liked John Kerry, me. And even the Republican base is like, shut up, you fucking weirdo. Who cares? So, you know, Hillary thinks she's gonna pull out some showstopper arguments against him. Like, oh, yeah, Donald? Well, you don't like Mexicans. Yeah, everybody already knows that. And he's still crushed in his primary. Now, you think, well, in the general, that'll show him and that'll win the election. Except if that's the only argument you have, people are going to go, all right, we got it. What's your next point? But she doesn't have a next point. There is no next point. You're really mean to Muslims. Yeah, that's true. He's a dick. But people are going to go, and then? What's your and then? Because Trump, ironically, does have the Trump card. And the Trump card is, you are Washington. You are the establishment. You do the bidding of wealthy donors. You act like you care about people. You don't give a shit about the people. And he will go to the left of her on many issues, including trade. And here's one way to win an election in the United States of America. Say what almost all the American people have been feeling since the first fucking trade deal, okay, and no politician has been saying, which is, we're going to stop with that nonsense, shipping all your jobs to Bangladesh and Mexico. I'm going to bring the jobs back here. Because I don't give a shit about these wealthy donors who are giving money to politicians to allow them to send more money overseas and send more jobs overseas. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to fight for you. And she's not going to have a response to that because she's not expecting him to be smart enough to go to the left of her on a variety of issues. And he will. He might even go to the left of her on foreign policy. And she'll be like, but something, Assad bad, need more war, blah, 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 blah. And here's an aspect of this nobody talks about. Trump might find a way to demoralize the Democratic base enough where they don't show up to vote for Hillary. So Trump already has a much higher appeal with independents and new voters than Hillary does. Hillary has almost no appeal with independents and new voters. So Trump gets all the independents and all the new voters. And because of the arguments he's going to make, he might actually suppress the Democratic base from going to vote for Hillary because he's going to keep hitting on some of their key issues, like foreign policy, like trade, like money and politics and corruption and the fact that she's bought. And if you undermine the Democratic base on the Democratic side, which looks possible if not likely, we can almost certainly see a President Trump very soon. So be afraid. Be very afraid. Okay. All right, now we're going to go to the next one. It's a poll on millennials to report to you. Still not over this cold slash allergy slash I don't know what the fuck it is thing yet. We have a fascinating new poll of millennials to report to you here. The Washington Post explains, a Harvard University survey, which polled young adults between ages 18 and 29, found that 51% of respondents do not support capitalism. It isn't clear that the young people in the poll would prefer some alternative system, though. Just 33% said they supported socialism. Okay, so my initial reaction reading this, the first part of it, I went, that's too liberal even for me. Like, I look at that and I go, no, really? 51% of you just say, capitalism, bad. I don't agree with that. My position is more nuanced. Capitalism, bad, sometimes. Capitalism need to be mixed with socialism. Like, that's my gut when I read it. So when I read the first part here, I went, oh, wow, they're even to the left of me. But then when I read the second part, I said, no, actually, they're probably right in a line with what I believe. Because so they're saying 51% says capitalism is bad, but only 33% says socialism is good. So what that tells me is, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, and maybe my, you know, the reasoning skills here falter, but what my takeaway is, oh, perhaps the way they asked the questions was too black and white, and so people, you know, had no way of saying, I prefer social democracy or democratic socialism, a Scandinavian type system. So they had to answer like this, when in reality they kind of want what I want and what a lot of you want, which is this middle ground between the two. So, you know, I've spoken about it before, but I disagree with communism. I know there are some people who are communists who listen to the show and they don't think I'm far left enough and whatever, you know, you guys can believe whatever the fuck you want to believe, it's fine. But I don't believe in communism. In fact, I'm kind of a strong opponent of communism. I also don't believe in, you know, some versions of socialism. Obviously, it's a kind of an amorphous term and there's a few different definitions, but I never just call myself a socialist. You know, I always try to be more nuanced than that because I think my position actually is more nuanced than that. I like to say that my position is the last stop on the way to socialism. So the last stop still in capitalism, but on the way to socialism. And again, it's very easy to conceptualize this because just think of Scandinavia. Just think of Norway, Denmark, Iceland, Sweden, all these places. They're pretty much spot on in my view with how they've mixed capitalism and socialism, where the idea is capitalism harnesses your human nature and your competitiveness, where people, okay, I want to get out there, I want to do something, and I want to build the best chairs or make the best video game or do this or that. All those things, so you still harness human nature, you still have that competitive philosophy underlying the economy and the system. But then also you counteract that and you balance that with taxation, and then you take the taxes and you put it towards things that we've declared are off the table. And this is the socialist aspect of the capitalist system, where you say, okay, everybody's going to have an equal opportunity. Not equality of outcome, equal opportunity, where don't worry, you're going to have health care. Okay, don't worry, you're going to get an education if you want it. Don't worry, we have things like universal daycare, paid vacation time by law, things like that, which make it so that we have a healthy environment of capitalism where the floor is not egregiously low, where you basically have a system of wage slavery set up. Okay, and I think that the Scandinavian region has done a much better job of fostering this kind of system than the U.S. has, various parts of Europe have. Australia has done a better job than the United States of fostering this kind of an environment. So at first I thought they're too liberal even for me if 51% say capitalism is bad. But then now when I read on, I said, oh, actually, I think they might be exactly where I am on this. And by the way, that explains the overwhelming millennial support for somebody like Bernie Sanders, because Bernie Sanders came along and said, what's your philosophy? Totally. I agree with that 100%. And then he fought for it. So when you look at the numbers of millennials and their support of Bernie, it is so overwhelming that you can see nothing except social democracy in the future of America. So, you know, that's the good news here. Now, we have a lot of fights to get to that point because we still have money in politics and the system is obviously biased in favor of wealthy donors and corporations. But if we keep fighting, we're going to win, and eventually we're going to get to the point where, in my view, we have the right balance, where we still have capitalism, we still have private ownership. You know, we don't have just central command, but we have a healthy mix of private enterprise, regulation of that private enterprise, and equal opportunity, including healthcare, education, and some other things. Okay, next. All right, let me do this Ted Cruz story because it is hilarious. So I want to tell you guys an interesting story here. This is from Mother Jones, and it's about how using a dildo in Texas was illegal as recently as 2008. Oh, that's so sad. So they explain here, the plaintiffs in the sex device case contended the state law violated the right to privacy under the 14th Amendment. They argued that many people in Texas used sexual devices as an aspect of their sexual experiences. They claim that in some instances, one partner in a couple might be physically unable to engage in intercourse or have a contagious disease such as HIV, and that in these cases, such devices could allow a couple to engage in safe sex. But a federal judge sent them packing, ruling that selling sex toys was not protected under the Constitution. The plaintiffs appealed, and the Solicitor General Office had the task of preserving the law. Okay, so let's pause here. I love how they had to get to the point where they made the argument that, hey, some people literally can't have sex, and they need, you know, these kinds of toys to have sexual gratification within their relationship. You shouldn't even have to make that argument, because you should be able to say, even if people, you know, don't have any issues and they choose to use these things, fuck off. Why shouldn't they be able to use these things? The state is going to get in your bedroom and say, no, I don't want you doing that. And this comes from the small government crowd. Hilarious. Okay, now, on appeal, the case was lost, thank goodness. So originally the judge said, yeah, you have no right to sell sex toys. No way, the government can stop you from doing that. But on appeal it was lost, and get this, quote, in one chapter of his campaign book, A Time for Truth, Ted Cruz proudly chronicles his days as the Texas Solicitor General, a post he held from 2003 to 2008. Ted Cruz was the one who defended the ban on dildos. His legal team argued there was no right to, quote, stimulate one's genitals. Oh, Ted, please. Please make that argument right now in the election. There's no right to stimulate your own genitals, me. And again, this is from a guy who claims he loves small government. The Washington cartel is always butting into your life, and that's the problem. We got to get government out. Unless it comes to you beating off or using a dildo, using a sex toy. In which case, Ted Cruz wants to stand there and say, no, you can't use that. Only I can use it and put it on my ass. What did I say that out loud mean? So sad. So sad. Dude, if you, as Solicitor General of Texas, argued for a case to keep dildos illegal, you're done. Disqualified. Strike one, you're out. There's no two, there's no three, you're out. How can we possibly even consider somebody to be President of the United States who, in his lifetime, argued in front of a court that dildos should be illegal? I mean, this is the kind of backwards social conservatism that, honestly, you're more likely to see in fucking Saudi Arabia and Pakistan than in the United States of America. This is the position you're going to take? Okay, we found another issue where Ted Cruz and the Taliban have something in common. Congratulations, everybody who supports Ted Cruz. This is the gargantuan moron who you apparently love. What an idiot. Dildo should be illegal. What a clown. All right, I got to take a break. When we come back, Ben Carson gave a curious reason for supporting Donald Trump yesterday. We'll be mocking that. And then we have a sad story about why universal health care has hit so many roadblocks in the United States of America. I think you guys already know what the answer is, but we have some evidence to further that idea. So stay right there, guys. We'll be right back with all that and much more.
She's got leather heart and leather gloves. She's the only girl that I want to
Ben Carson gave a curious reason for supporting Donald Trump yesterday. He said, "I fully support him, but, you know, what I was saying is that I'm pragmatic. You know, I've grown up in the world of science where, you know, we do things based on evidence and on facts." Okay, what does that mean? What are you saying? That has nothing to do with supporting Donald Trump. Yeah, I support Donald Trump because of science. Facts. What facts? What science? What are you talking about? Now, he goes on to explain further how Well, the only way that the other guys can win is through a contested convention. Yeah, that's true. But I, what does that have to do with science? It's got nothing to do with science. So then I realized, well, hey, wait. We're talking about Ben Carson here. So he's the world's dumbest neurosurgeon. Brilliant neurosurgeon, too, by the way. Don't know how. But in other fields, not so great. So here's how much he really believes in science. Here's a quote from him that he said a few years back. They say, Carson, you know, how can you be a surgeon, a neurosurgeon, and believe that God created the earth and not believe in evolution, which is the basis of all knowledge and all science? Well, you know, it's kind of funny. But I do believe God created us, and I did just fine. So I don't know where they get that stuff from, you know? It's not true. And in fact, the more you know about God and the deeper your relationship with God, I think the more intricate becomes your knowledge of the way things work, including the human body. He's a neurosurgeon who doesn't believe in evolution. Which means he may be, he's like an albatross. He's so rare, he may be the only neurosurgeon on earth that's like, evolution? Nah, not buying it. World is 6,000 years old. It was Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, huh? Fucking gays. And you see, what happened was there was the tree of knowledge with the fruit, and then over time there was the burning bush and the talking snake and the old dude with the ark who lived to age 900, and the world flooded, but he saved everybody, including the fucking polar bears and the lions, who one lives in freezing climates, the other one lives in hot climates, but on the same boat they survived. All the animals were there. They didn't eat each other either. And they fucked and they reproduced, and we managed to fit millions of boats on a single ark, which was too big to even be built. But all that's true because hashtag science. Why do I support Donald Trump? Hashtag science. Pretty sure your version of science is not indeed real science. Okay. Next. I have such a great symbol for America here in this next story. Raw Story is reporting on a particularly silly story here involving money and politics. They say Georgia Republican Representative Tom Taylor was arrested and charged with driving under the influence this month when he was pulled over while speeding with children in the car. Okay, that part's not funny. They say, perhaps not coincidentally, liquor lobbying groups have started pouring money into Taylor's reelection campaign coffers. He has received about 36 contributions totaling $20,000 from the liquor lobby since mid-2010. Okay. This story is just so American. Petition, drunk driving, with kids in the car, and by the way, a gun was there too, and he was way over the legal limit, they say. In his reelection campaign, you have the liquor lobby that's like, huh, that's our guy. Now, why would they pick that guy? Well, he obviously loves the product, and perhaps he would fight to loosen regulations and lower the drinking age or get rid of drunk driving or just any of a million different things that would help their bottom line. I wonder if the system makes sense when you have private interests giving money to politicians. They don't expect favors in return. No, never. They do it because they agree with his philosophy. His philosophy of life, you know, his different concepts and ideas. He's a really nuanced person, if you can tell by his character here. And the liquor lobby's like, who are you to judge? Maybe I'm donating because I agree with his stance on stem cell research. Yeah, I'm sure that's what it is. Guys, our system is so immensely corrupt that embarrassing shit like this happens. We have legalized bribery. That's what it is. And the idiots of the Supreme Court, oh my God, have you read the decisions in Citizens United or McCutcheon or any of them? I mean, one of the justices said that having private money in politics, not only is it not corruption, it's not even the appearance of corruption. Okay, I'm not an idiot, and I look at that, I go, that's definitely corruption. Why is it that Wall Street gave so much money to politicians in both parties, and then look at that, lo and behold, they got a bailout when the going got tough? Why does that happen? Meanwhile, your local deli, your local grocery store, your local dry cleaner, who may be a staple of the community that everybody uses, nobody says, oh my God, they're going under, rush in and bail them out, the government must bail them out. They never do that. Why? They don't pay their bribes. But Wall Street pays their bribes, so when they go up, oh my God, you have to go save them with taxpayer money. And by the way, when you save them, no strings attached. Don't tell them, hey, here's the money and you can't do these crazy practices that led to the crash. No, just give them the money and shut the fuck up. And then they turn around and pay bonuses to the same idiots that bankrupted the companies. And then they have the balls to make the argument, we need to retain the talent. They just bankrupted your companies. That's not talent. That would be the opposite of talent. You should want them fucking fired instead of paying them bonuses. Unbelievable. But this is the system we have. Drunk driving politician. Now the liquor lobby's like, oh, yummy. I can't wait to donate more and more and more because then I'll definitely get what I want. We need clean elections. We need to get the private money out of the system so we can actually have a competing idea, a competing system of philosophies and ideas, as opposed to private interests paying money and then the politicians representing those private interests. It's easy. If the public are the only people that pay the politicians, they're much more likely to represent the public. I know, wacky. Okay, more. We're cruising here. Li Fang of The Intercept has a great article on a concerted effort by healthcare lobbyists to oppose universal healthcare. So we knew they were doing this for a long time. Now we have a direct story here that exposes it. So he explains, the campaign in Colorado to create the nation's first state-based single-payer health insurance system, providing universal coverage and replacing insurance premiums with higher taxes, has barely begun. But business interests in Colorado are not taking anything for granted, and many of the largest lobbying firms, lobbying groups around the country and in the state are raising funds to defeat Amendment 69, the single-payer ballot question going before voters this November. The Council of Insurance Agents and Brokers, a national trade group, is mobilizing its member companies to defeat single-payer in Colorado. Ah, there you go. So, all these different health industry businesses are saying, yeah, we don't want that because then that'll cut into our profits. So we're going to lobby against it. And what are they going to do? Unquestionably, they're going to lie. Now, we've seen this before. I mean, we've seen this on the marijuana front. They come up with the most deceptive commercials you've ever seen. And even when they had gay marriage on the ballot in California, this is obviously before the Supreme Court case, they purposefully made it confusing so that you didn't know, oh, if I vote yes, am I voting for gay marriage, or is it if I vote no, I'm voting for gay marriage? It was hard for people to get it. There were ads when it comes to marijuana like, oh, if you want to legalize it, vote this way. And then the way they would tell you to vote is to not legalize it. I mean, this is the kind of crazy shit that they do. Well, this is exactly what they're going to try to do here with healthcare. So they're going to try to make it seem like, oh, my God, you're going to pay more money and you're going to get worse care if you have a single-payer system, when that is not true. And remember, who has the most to lose when we have a single-payer healthcare system? The health insurance companies. Why? They are a cash-sucking, predatory middleman. We don't need that middleman. So think about it. You pay money to somebody where you say, hey, if some shit happens to me and I need health care, you're my insurance company, so you pay with the money that I've just given to you in premiums. But what do they often do? They go, oh, okay, totally, no, we're going to do that, but you have a copay of like $3,000 first, and then I'll pay for the shit on top of that. What the fuck? I've been paying you money every single month, and then when something happens, now I got to pay $3,000 out of pocket first, and then you pay after that. Well, why the fuck have I been giving you money? Why do I need to pay $3,000? You fucking pay. I just gave you all the money. You pay. Well, this it's set up for that reason. It's set up to fucking rob you. That's the whole point of the system. It's a for-profit health insurance system. And how do you make money in a for-profit health insurance system? By denying care as much as possible. So when somebody says, hey, I have this issue, They go right to the contract and they go, oh, well, because of Clause 37, Article A, Subsection D, we don't have to pay because that was a pre-existing condition that you didn't tell us about beforehand. You know, we've covered the story on air before. There was a woman who needed cancer treatment, and her health insurance company went back in time and they looked at her records and they found that there was a time when she had acne as a kid. So they said, we're not going to pay for your cancer treatment. She's like, what the fuck? It was acne. They go, no, no, you say it was acne. We say it was cancerous skin lesions. Therefore, you already had cancer once and didn't disclose it. Now we are well within our legal rights to not pay for your treatment. This is the system we have. The way you make money as a health insurance company is to deny care as much as possible to pad the bottom line. And then to put the cherry on top of that, as you deny care to people, you also run ads on TV where you talk about how you're the best health insurance company. Why? Because you need more money, more money, more money, more money, more money, because that's the whole point is profit. Guys, I'm not against the profit motive in every single circumstance. I'm just not. There are some areas where it turns out that's a good incentive. Making video games, making couches, you know, hey, compete for the lower price and the best quality. It works in that realm. It just doesn't work for health insurance because it's a perverse incentive. You're going to want to make more money, and the way you make more money is denying more care. That's how you pad the bottom line. It's a disgusting system, and they're going to try to mislead you to not get the single-payer system because they know eventually that'll put them out of business. Why? What they're doing is useless. We don't need them. We could have a single insurer, a single payer, the government. That's what single-payer means. That's the way to go. And don't buy the nonsense. You will save money in this system. You may pay a little more in taxes, but you get such a gigantic cut in your private insurance premiums, you don't have private insurance premiums anymore, that you will net save money. Don't buy the propaganda. Don't be stupid. Go look at the data for yourself. In all the countries that have a single-payer, government-run health system, they do much better than us in every relevant category. Okay, next. Let's go to Fox News, see what they're up to. Fox News had a very intellectual discussion here about the election. Let's watch.
Always nice to be here. You know what? I don't know what it's going to take. I am not a political expert, but I'm an American, and I hold conservative values, and I think at the end of the day, I realize I put my faith in Jesus Christ, not in any one person, and whoever becomes our candidate, our nominee, and eventually our president, I will pray for them and support that they make the best decisions for our country that they can.
I know your faith is very important to you, as it is to many of us and many of our viewers. Do you feel like in this election, we just pray about it and give it to God, and God's going to pick the right candidate, or you know, how do we go into this as a Christian?
Still go to the polls, even if ultimately I'm not satisfied with the candidate, I'm still going to go in and vote. And I don't know who I'm going to vote for at this point. I honestly don't, but I will pray about the decision of who I'll vote for.
How is this a thing in 2016? That's their entire conversation. You know, me, I don't know. I'm going to pray. I'm going to talk to my invisible friend. And whatever my invisible friend says, imagine if you, instead of the word God, we put in the word Lenny. Then they'd just be psychopaths, right? Like, oh, yeah, no. See, what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk to Lenny. Who's Lenny? It's just this almighty being that lives in the sky. But anyway, I'm going to talk to Lenny. And I'm going to say, oh, great Lenny. Who shall be our leader? And then, you know, Lenny will let me know. By the way, if God / Lenny is actually, if you hear that voice in your head, seek help. Thorazine, Seroquel, antipsychotic drugs, straitjackets. Look into it. They just talk about it like it's the most normal thing ever. I know your faith is important to you. It's important to me, too, and a lot of people in our audience. So what do you think happens? Do you think that if we just praise God, that God is going to pick the right leader? Is that what's going to happen? Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar! Why don't we view that through the same spectrum? We should. That's exactly what the fuck they're doing. They're sitting there like it's having a conversation like they're the fucking Taliban. God will pick. Allah will pick!
He will pick the leader. May God will it.
Like, you guys are all fucking crazy people. Why are you... There's nothing there. What are you doing? You know how we solve problems in the real world, how adults do it? By fucking addressing the problems. By using your brain and looking at the issues and going, okay, that one, how do they want to fix the situation that we have with trade? Our giant trade deficit, people losing their jobs. Oh, okay, well, this person wants to stop and reverse the trend and stop outsourcing. Like, this is how you make sense of the world. Oh, there's poverty and the minimum wage isn't a living wage. Okay, who wants to make the minimum wage a living wage? Who wants to make it so that, you know, we give people a better shot at a productive life? They're, like, none of that is in the conversation. They're just like, God, my friend Lenny the space fairy was whispering to me, and Lenny always makes the right decision. We talk to Lenny, and Lenny will pick, and then it'll be all right. And I love how the more moderate one on the panel was like, No, so you talk to your invisible friend, and then you go to the polls and vote after having spoken to your invisible friend. Oh, well, thank you. At least you're going to actually participate in the process. The other one, she's like, should we just pray and God will pick? Like, nobody votes, but God is like, and here is your leader. Fox News Network. News. Yeah, this is news. My ass cheeks, that's news. All right, now it's going to get even better now. I got another one of these stories. Sarah Burris of Raw Story got her hands on the funniest video I've ever seen here. It's an Alabama preacher warning us about the evils of sex.
Has never been ordained to God. In fact, it was the first sin, Adam and Eve, and the serpent. And you see what happened to the serpent on that. But like I say, sex is the problem. If you don't mention sex, two men or two women can live together, share a place, have a place, and one can leave everything she got, otherwise they'll have a merged partner, they call it. They'll have all the rights, that, like, you know, married people, that they call it marriage between a man, they'll have all the same thing. But if you don't mention sex, otherwise when they go home to their home, they may not have, if sex is not mentioned, they may not be no sex. We don't know. You're not supposed to try to find out. That sex is between two consenting people of age. And that's where it's supposed to stay, right there.
Agreed.
You're not supposed to go out and talk about it.
Oh.
It's the old song, Behind Closed Doors. I don't know if any of you have ever heard that. It was a song that called Behind Closed Doors. But then that's where the sex thing's supposed to stay between the two people. It's not supposed to be talked about. It's not supposed to be filmed. It's not sex is a very, and I say this to the young people, sex is a very dangerous thing. As dangerous can be, as dangerous as cocaine or anything else. If you start young, say a young person, and get hooked on that, it'll paralyze your mind to where you won't learn very good like you ought to most times. Then it's going to create all kind of problems. Sex is the biggest, most reason all the homeless, abused children in the world is because of sex, you know.
Oh, right. Oh, that's my favorite video ever. I just want to watch that video 8 more times. Just laugh and laugh and laugh. The way he says sex is even funny. It's not sex. It's sex! Sex! Now, let me tell you something about that right here. You know, sex leads to all the homelessness and abused kids in the world, don't you know? You know it's some bullshit when you got to add, like, the exclamation mark at the end with that nonsense phrase? Like, all right, I know I'm bullshitting, so I got to sell it. Sex leads to all the homelessness and abused kids in the world, don't you know? No, I don't know. Neither do you. You totally made that up. says, sex has never been ordained by God. Okay, then why did God create us being able to fuck? And in fact, he created us, if there is a God, which I don't think there is, but, and then that's how we create more people. Like, you, Mr. Alabama preacher dude, you exist because mommy and daddy fucked. All of us exist because mommy and daddy fucked. Sex never been ordained by God! Never been ordained by him, he don't like it none. Then why did he create us with that ability, and why did he make it so goddamn pleasurable? See, that doesn't make sense. Your position is irrational. Sex is the problem. It's not supposed to be talked about, not supposed to be found. Why? Why? It's always such arbitrary rules from fundamentalists where it's like, I just declare that's, when we talk about sex, that's immoral. But that has nothing to do with morality. And these are the same people who typically don't invoke actual morality where it makes sense. Like we've spoken about on the show before, when it comes to the Iraq War, most conservative Christians were for it. Invading a country that didn't attack us, killing minimum 200,000 civilians, like, they're like, oh, that's totally moral. Torture. They defended torture. That's totally moral. Yeah, torture people. They don't fight for social safety net programs, which help poor people and make sure that they don't fucking go homeless and go hungry. They're like, oh, I'm against that. Well, no, then you're immoral. This is where morality actually belongs. They're like, no, it doesn't belong there. But it belongs in conversation about sex. Sex is evil, and God don't like it when you do a little piggly wink dance and have the sex and whatnot like that right there. Have the sex like that right there. Have it like that right there. Oh, what a child. Jesus, a child. But obviously, my favorite claim in the video was, all the homeless and abused kids in the world are from sex. Can we get PolitiFact on that? Is PolitiFact busy? You want to do a little bit of fact-checking here? Okay. All right. See how much more we could get in. All right, one or two more here, and we'll call it a day. Turkish Parliament Speaker Ismail Karaman gave a ridiculous speech yesterday at an Islamic scholars and writers conference in Istanbul. He said the following: we are a Muslim country, and so we should have a religious constitution. Secularism would not have a place in a new constitution. Okay, now, if you don't think this is a big deal, well, it is a big deal, because Turkey is a secular Muslim nation. You know, this is Ataturk and what he effectively gave us. Now, in some ways, Ataturk was horrific, but when it comes to secularism, he was spot on about that, and Turkey actually has a history of being secular as a result of that. And lest you think this, well, whatever, this is just some random politician, it doesn't really affect the nation in any way, shape, or form. Well, RT explains here, as the head of the parliament, it's Karaman's job to pen a new draft constitution for Turkey. The AKP has its roots in political Islam, that's the party he's a member of, and Erdogan's party, and has been pushing for constitutional amendments during its 13-year rule. Oh boy. So what they're saying is, this is the guy who's responsible for penning a new constitution. And he's up there saying, yeah, secularism in Turkey, bye-bye, gone. Ugh. R.I.P. Turkey, that's what I feel like saying. First of all, Erdogan is already an authoritarian ruler. He already has theocratic tendencies. For example, it's been reported that he's helping arm al-Nusra, which is al-Qaeda, in Syria to topple Assad, because Assad's Shia and he doesn't like him. So flat out helping terrorists. He said some horrific things about how, he wants to emulate Hitler's regime. The guy's a fucking lunatic, and he's done the classic authoritarian trick where he goes back and forth from prime minister to president to prime minister to president to prime minister to president, and look at that, lo and behold, wherever he ends up is wherever all the power is. So when he's prime minister, oh, hey, prime minister has all the power. When he's president, oh, prime minister is symbolic, president has all the power. So it's obvious he's an authoritarian leader. Look at how he's cracked down on free speech. For fuck's sake, in Germany,
he's made it so that, you know, you can't really criticize him. There was a comedian who has a late night show who did, you know, a funny song about him, was satirizing him. And Angela Merkel was like, yeah, we might arrest that guy. The fuck are you talking about? And, of course, they gave the old, we believe in free speech, but, no, there is no but. Then you don't believe in free speech. The second part of your sentence is going to contradict the first part of your sentence. And Erdogan himself says, oh, yeah, I believe in freedom of speech, too, but just insults aren't included in that. Of course they are. Why the fuck wouldn't they be? So anytime anybody disagrees with anybody or insults somebody, oh, lock one of you up. Why? Why? He's locked up kids for tearing down posters of him, Erdogan has. There was somebody who compared him to Gollum on Facebook, and he locked him up. Freedom and liberty and secularism in Turkey, if it's either dying quickly or dying slowly at best, but it's dying, and it's dying, okay? So this is something that's horrendous, and the U.S., we're, you know, big-time allies with Turkey. We got to exert some influence here because you can't – to lose Turkey as a Muslim nation, I mean as a secular nation, and have it become a Muslim nation, it's horrible for world politics, and it's also horrible for all the many secular people who actually live in Turkey. Turkey in many respects is like Iran, actually, where the population is younger, the population is much more secular than the dinosaur theocrats who run the country. I mean, you want to talk about the biggest victims on the planet, it would be the secular people in Turkey if we were to move in this other direction and have Turkey become more like Saudi Arabia, which is certainly a possibility with a fucking maniac like Erdogan running the place. So I would say let's apply our pressure and do the right thing here, but we have a history of not doing that. I mean, look at Saudi Arabia. For fuck's sake, they declared all atheists are terrorists, and they kill people for sorcery and witchcraft, and they bomb women and children in Yemen, and we're still arming them and letting them do their thing. So I don't have much hope that the U.S. will actually stand up and try to do something for secularism, and that's bad. Okay. We're done. Love you guys. We'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Everybody have a great rest of the day. Mwah. Kisses. Later.